Good evening, everybody. It's good to see you. I feel kind of like this is a special night. I don't know how many of you have brought any kind of expression to talk about this a picture, but I think we'll find our way through regardless. Let's see here. So my name is Tuere Salah, and I am here. I'm one of the guiding teachers here at Seattle Insight. And tonight is going to be a discussion night. It's kind of a unique discussion night because part of our discussion is hopefully a way to express what this particular picture means to each of us. We'll do it in small groups. And I will give a kind of an overview of what we've been talking about all month. And then we'll go into some breakout rooms and kind of share what it means to us. And then I'll share the poem that I think captures this for me. And then we'll just see how we are, how it comes up for us. So I'd like to start us out. Oh, let me just check and see if anyone's new. If anyone, this is their first time coming to Seattle Insight. We're all good? Great. Well, we usually start with a sit, 40 minutes. It's great to see you all. We have some people still coming in, so we can just start our sit, and I like to bring a poem in just to start a sit with. And so this is the poem I'd like. I like poetry for sits, for those of you that don't know. I like it because I noticed that no matter what I did, I could not stop my mind from thinking. And instead of fighting with the mind to stop it from thinking, I decided that I would read a poem ahead of time so that if the mind started thinking, that I would contemplate on whatever the poem said. And I would just shift my attention to that. And so I thought I'd read this poem here. I got the wrong one. Oh, yeah, this is it. So something to contemplate on. This is from Ian McCrory's book, The Moon Appears When the Water is Still. It's just his, I think he's Zen practitioner, and it's his reflections on the Dhamma and some, I think, Zen stories. So here's a reflection here on page 51. The young novice returns to his master after a year in the forest alone. So the, you know, in Zen, your teacher is called a master. So the young novice returns to his master after a year in the forest alone. I'm still lost in thought. I miss my family and friends, and I can't quiet my mind. I am miserable. That's what the novice says to his master. Good, replied the master. How can that be good? Said the novice. The first step in liberation is to experience that suffering is inherent to being born, said the master. The first step to liberation is to experience that suffering is inherent in being born. And the next step, said the novice, is to realize that this suffering, the novice interrupts him, is good? And the master says, no, suffering is not good. What is good then, said the novice? The ability to observe the suffering is good. So the first step to liberation is to experience that suffering is inherent in being born. And the next step is to realize that this suffering is not good, but the ability to observe the suffering is good. So the novice said, good, knows it. So that's what I'd like you to consider contemplating. If the mind gets caught into something, are you noticing, can you notice the suffering within that thinking? Or are you just caught up in the thinking itself? If you have some difficulty with the sit at all, anxiousness, restlessness, sleepiness, it doesn't matter. Irritation, wishing it was over, whatever, wishing it was longer. Can you notice the suffering you're having rather than try to fix whatever it is that you wish were not there or you wish were otherwise? That's what we can shift our attention from, trying to fix whatever difficulty or whatever thing that we're not wanting, or we can just notice the suffering contained within it. So that's what we're going to sit here a little bit to practice. I'll ring a bell here to get us started. So I'm going to take about 15 minutes to bring us to where we are tonight, kind of go over the picture. The picture that we have been working with this evening, we've been working with for this whole kind of time. See if I can pull up the picture here. Okay, good. So I'm going to put in the chat. I'm going to put in the chat this link to this picture here, so that you could, if you didn't actually bring a, like an artistic expression about the picture, then you could use the picture itself to kind of look at it. The reason why I want to talk about artistic expression at the end of each month is because, unlike the way normally when we do our weekly sits, we have a Dhamma talk and there's a talk about a Dhamma subject and we share that talk and then we maybe we practice it with it a little bit. Maybe we talk about it. Maybe you don't. You could go through basically the whole month or the whole year series and never really talk about what's coming up for you. You could come every week. You could listen. You could listen to other people talk. But there's no real necessity to share your practice with anyone. And these pictures, these ox herding pictures, are not really like that. The ox herding pictures are less about a Dhamma talk and more about how is practice unfolding for us. What is coming alive when we see these pictures and when we go through each month? What is it that's being touched by us? There's something to the notion of this month's picture, which is seeing the footprints, there's something to this idea that you're within practice, there are these little glimpses that help us stay in the path. So for the yogi in the picture that we're working with this month, that yogi is actually looking for themselves is what they're looking for. They're trying to find a way out of their own misery. And the month before, they were just in the misery. And this month, the first month, they were just in the misery. And they were trying to, at that point, to find a way out of their misery. But they're just so in the misery that they're just running around trying to find a way. I shouldn't call it misery because I think misery is too much of a like a sadness. And not often when we're in suffering does it feel sad. We can be in suffering and actually be quite happy because everything is working out for us and everything is going good. We just don't realize that things are going to change and it won't stay like that. And so there's a not the inevitable everything's going to fall apart, but just the nature of life, things are not always what they seem. And so every time we get caught up in some positive or good thing that's happening to us without recognizing that it's subject to change, then we set ourselves up in that way for the disappointment when the change comes. And the only suffering we have in life comes in the fact that we have to experience things that are unpleasant, that we don't get to keep the things that are pleasant, and that we have to kind of learn to accept this constant changing that goes on in our lives all the time. We have to live with it. And it's not that we can't live with change. It's just that we get caught off guard every time something good happens, that it changes. And then all of a sudden, what was peaceful is not. I mean, if we had known this year was going to be like this year, we may not be quite so discombobulated in the year the way it is. But it has unfolded. You know, in December, I had no idea that by the time I'd be in March, I'd be feeling the level of tension I feel about just the idea that there could be a third war and there could be a nuclear war and all of that energy and just the fear about climate and will this pandemic ever leave and all of that. I did not go into this year thinking it would be this way. And yet here I am in this year as it is, worried about all kinds of things. So this changing nature is human. What the pictures are depicting is how a yogi, just like you and I, how our understanding unfolds when we begin to encounter the Dhamma. And the first thing we encounter when we encounter the Dhamma is the footprints. This is the first thing. We see some things here. And I was sharing with you that a lot of Zen teachers, when I did all this research on these pictures, they say that this picture represents before you've ever started practicing. So the glimpses of Dhamma that you're seeing, the glimpses of the footprint you're seeing, doesn't have anything to do with the actual practice because you haven't started practicing yet. I have a hard time with that because I still feel like I come into these I still feel like there are times, even though I've been practicing for over 30 years, there are times even now when I feel like I am seeing footprints about what's possible even further still in my understanding. And I feel like I see footprints and I don't see the real thing yet. It's not that I don't see any Dhamma, but I don't see, there's something else that I'm beginning to see now that I didn't see before. It's been happening ever since I've been on the path. And so what I begin to think is that what these footprints could represent is the period of time when we have knowledge of Dhamma, but we don't actually apply it in our lives. So there's a way in which we see some things. We have some glimpses of what's possible. We have some understandings, and we see some pretty dramatic things happen in our lives randomly, but we don't actually apply the Dhamma in a moment of anger. We see what the implications are, but we don't actually practice with it. We don't actually see the Dhamma in a moment of difficulty. We don't actually turn our attention towards liberation. We may not even know how to turn our attention towards liberation. Because part of the difficulty with this first picture is the second picture is the line between hope or the potentiality of finding a path and doubt, which is you haven't seen anything yet, so you're not really sure. You're not really sure there is an ox. You haven't seen it. And that's the line that's being straddled here. And I just know times in my practice and times right now, I've shared this with some yogis that I just feel like there's a depth that my practice is coming into, but I don't quite know what it is. So I feel like there's some awakening that's possible, that I could see something, I could understand something, but I don't have a clue what it is. I don't even know why I think that, but it feels so palpable to me. I think that's footsteps. I think this is what the footprints are. There's something that we now begin to see that there's some possibility here, and we've had some glimpses of it, but we're not quite sure what it is. We're not quite sure how to get to it. We're not sure what it is, and we don't apply the Dhamma in any given moment. We're just kind of extremely interested in what's going on. So the verse, you can read it, has a lot of looking about, searching for it. So I thought I would read my poem of what I think this means. I know you guys may have heard this poem before because I love it. And this is when I was thinking about what could I use to express this. I thought, oh my God, it's why I almost get teary-eyed every time I read this poem, because of the potential nature of it. So this poem is by Grace. It's by Joy Harjo, called Grace. And she writes this poem for two people named Darlene Wind and James Welch. And this is what she says. If you don't know who Joy Harjo is, she is a poet laureate for the US. And she's a Native American woman, and I love her poetry. Just flat out love it. And so this is one of my very, very favorite poems. She says, "I think of wind and her wild ways, the year we had nothing to lose, and lost it anyway in the cursed country of the fox. We still talk about that winter, how the cold froze imaginary buffalo on the stuffed horizons of snowbanks. The haunted voices of the starved and mutilated broken fences crashed our thermostat dreams, and we couldn't stand it one more time. So once again, we lost a winter in the stubborn memory, walked through cheap apartment walls, skated through fields of ghosts into a town that never wanted us, in the epic search for grace. Like coyote, like rabbit, we could not contain our terror and clowned our way through a season of false midnights. We had to swallow that town with laughter so it would go down easy as honey. And one morning, as the sun struggled to break ice and our dreams had found us with coffee and pancakes in a truck stop along Highway 80, we found grace. I could say Grace was a woman with time on her hands, or a white buffalo escaped from memory. But in that dingy light, it was a promise of balance. We once again understood the talk of animals, and spring was lean and hungry with the hope of children and corn. I would like to say with Grace, we picked ourselves up and walked into the spring thaw. We didn't. The next season was worse. You went home to Leech Lake to work with the tribe, and I went south. And wind, I am still crazy. I know there is something larger than the memory of a dispossessed people. We have seen it. This is what I think these footprints represent. See, when I think of a dispossessed people, I don't think grace, I don't think joy is writing to just Native American or Indigenous people. I think as Dhamma practitioners, we are dispossessed people. We are people living in samsara. And samsara is not, it goes against everything that our practice is pointing to. So here we are trying our best to joyfully deal with this world that basically goes against everything that we are trying to open up to. So we live in a world full of greed, hatred, and delusion as a impulsive way to act. And here we are trying to live out of goodwill, non-harm, and restraint. And that following the Eightfold Path in samsara brings with it a level of difficulty that it brings with it the struggle this yogi is caught in. And I think the footprints are the, is that moment that they were sitting in the truck stop eating pancakes, drinking coffee, laughing and talking to each other. And in that moment, it's sort of like some of the moments we've felt when we come and we're at Sangha and we're talking to each other and you just feel this camaraderie. Like, oh yeah, we can do it. No worry. I don't care what's going on. We can do it together. There's a felt sense of we've remembered it. We've connected back with it. And then, psh, you know, we get off the Zoom, we leave Sims, and then we're back in it all by ourselves trying to figure out how we're going to make it through or how we're going to, you know, how we're going to get practice in this moment. You know, some news comes down the pike and how am I going to practice with that? But there's a quality of knowing that we can't always see how the Dhamma, we don't see the Dhamma actually showing up. Or in this case, we don't see our true nature in every moment. That's what this yogi is looking for. The yogi is looking for their true self, their Buddha nature, their liberated mind, the capacity to handle whatever's happening in the world without losing ourselves in it. They don't see that. But there are moments when we see it. There are moments when we are together and we can remember. We have this, I think you've all felt it. I hope you've all felt it. The sense of complete possibility that there is liberation of the mind. It is possible. We may not know how to get it. We may not know what it looks like. We may not know, you know, I don't even know if I believe it entirely. But there are these moments when we're together and it feels totally, our whole spirits are lifted in this sense that it's possible. That's what I think the second picture is pointing to. That's what I think Joy Harjo is pointing to in Grace. It's not perfect. It's still a mess. This whole, just a couple more things here to bring out. Just this whole section about in the beginning, being in this cursed country, you know, a fox, the coyote is like a trickster, and the fox, if I understand certainly don't know native folklore and how it works, but the fox, country of the fox, is like this, it's like a lone country, it's a kind of a trickster, and it doesn't, I shouldn't say trickster, but it's kind of not, you're alone, you're isolated, it's sort of like that, you're out there in a world feeling isolated. So here we are, almost like you might feel this, like as practitioners, we're in this some kind of a weird world here. We're practicing for non-harm, we're practicing for kindness and care and compassion in a world that is exploding with anger and harm and just destructiveness. So it might feel like we're in the wrong time frame. We must be in the wrong era. I don't know what it is. We're like practitioners in a weird world. That's that country of the fox. And I like that she uses this as winter, because there's a kind of heaviness around winter, that everything is dead. It doesn't seem like you can, it doesn't seem like it's growing and alive and special. And so there's a way in which everything around us might seem like it's dying or dead. And yet, here we are having to have an upbeat energy, looking for some possibility of a liberation. This is what I think she's pointing to, is the same thing that this picture's pointing to. And here we are, just like they had to laugh and do all these things to try to be with the world that they were in. This yogi is searching through the grasses and searching here and there, trying to find this, she's trying to find grace, and the yogi's trying to find this Buddha nature, this inner possibility of liberation. So that's what this is to me. That's what this picture represents. And I'm hoping that if you did not bring a picture yourself, that you're willing to look at the link and just look at the picture and what comes up for you right now. There's no requirement that you brought something. Just look at the picture, look at the verse that goes with it, and what comes up for you. And that will go in these small groups and see if you can share what comes up for you when you're looking at it. So you just click on the picture and then you can see the verse that goes with it. I think that's enough. I think I've shared my piece. Thank you all for your kind attention.